condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Al. Mr. Dave Scatina on the board, as he is every Thursday. We have Mr. Lou Michaels is called. Then we have S&P Futures up 12. As that Futures up 62, that's pretty pikerish. We should be up way more than that. We got to be up every day now. We're gonna melt this market up. We're going to give money to everybody. Yesterday, we're going to give money to states. We're going to give money for vaccines. We just got the Defense Protection Act coming up with more masks when you go into a Sam's Club and buy all the masks you want for like $2. We don't know exactly why we need that, but we got stuff going, Lou. We got stuff going. Just saying.
I think I'm going to refer to this as the occasional cortex economic policy.
Yeah.
Which is just print. We just print money.
I don't know how we ever got to this, Lou. I tell you what.
That woman is an economics major from Boston College. I don't know how she. I mean, I think that's one of her statements. I don't understand it either.
What is it about people who think they can absolutely just take any type of principle, no matter what it is, be it crime and punishment, when people say all the old stuff people used to do is no good, a lot of times, Lou, they're right. But if you have nothing to replace it with,
I'm going to refer back to a poem that I have talked about on the show before. It's Rudyard Kipling, so our progressive friends would immediately reject it because he was a white British poet from the Victorian colonial period. But Kipling wrote a poem called The Gods of the Copybook Headings. And it's a classic kind of Victorian poem, but it is absolutely true, and it talks about the fact that there are certain fundamental rules that are unalterable, and they're unpleasant. They require sacrifice. They require effort. They require hard work. They require intellectual honesty. These rules, and they're called copybook, the gods of the copybook headings, because English school children had workbooks that they called copybooks, where they would write down instructions, handwriting, homework, whatever. But the copybooks were mass-produced, and they contained, at the top of each page, a heading, typically, you know, things like silence is golden, the stitch in time saves nine, and sort of what Kipling referred to as fundamental truths. And he notes in this poem that these fundamental truths are not attractive, and that people, you know, wander away from them because there are much more attractive things placed in front of them. And as they wander away from them, terrible things happen. And I come back to it every time I see these kinds of public policy discussions, and every time we talk, because obviously you and I believe that there are, you know, fundamental rules that have to go forward, and certain basic laws for interactions and a working society. And if you don't have that, then eventually people are going to get messed up, and ultimately Kipling's point was ultimately it causes the fall of society. But in any event, I commend that poem again as this new administration takes office. I commend that poem again because one of the other themes of it is, you know, hope is not a strategy. Wishful thinking is not a substitute for facing reality. And I just think we're not doing a very good job of that.
Some of it has to do, unfortunately, the three of us, David's not as, he's pretty close to me as my age, but, I see stuff that happened 20 years ago and I see the pain it caused, and it seems like yesterday. And I see the policies that caused it to happen. And I say, boy, that wasn't very long ago. We can't be stupid enough to go down that same road. not to mention the stuff that was 40 years ago that was really a disaster in the late 70s, 80s. It had to do with Fed increasing money into the system. Yet, obviously, I have the problem because people that are 35 years old and think they know everything, or 30 that are in these administrations and a new economist, they never went through that. They have no idea what it means.
It's not just that. It's an appalling lack of historical knowledge by people that you think are educated. And I'm gonna put two examples out. The first is recent. Martin Luther King's birthday, national holiday on Monday. So if you look at the stuff that's being spouted now by critical race theorists and their promoters, and if you haven't sat through a diversity training session in a company recently, you're in for a shock when you see if these folks are part of your training curriculum, and in many cases they are. That this training program and this philosophy turns Dr. King's "I Have a Dream" speech on its head.
Oh yeah,
where he talks about I believe people will be one day measured by the content of their character and not the color of their skin. That's reversed for the kind of identitarian politics that we see being promoted by a number of, at least so far, a number of Biden appointees. It's the other way around. It's your skin color is your determinant, and that's what we look at first, and that's what we should look at. And everything else flows from that. As an employment lawyer, a guy who practiced under the 64 Civil Rights Act in Title VII, I will tell you that flies in the face of all kinds of court decisions and legal theories and everything else that enacted that statute.
These people don't care a little bit. This is their new world, and they're defining it as they go.
I know, but so that lack of historical knowledge, that lack of understanding of what King was promoting, is a huge issue, but it's stunning, to me to watch that roll out. If you look at its corollary, which is diversity training, this mentality has basically taken over corporate America. It's taken over much of the military, and so the lack of historical context is what I find so astounding in these folks. So the other incident that I would mention is more personal, and again it points to the lack of grounding in our institutional and cultural values that basically make it possible for us to hold this thing together. And so I had a young attorney who came to work for me in Chicago. She was, at the top of her class in one of the Chicago law schools, brighter than hell, hard worker, delightful kind of personality. One day we're talking, and she made some reference, and that caused me to think she really doesn't have a real sense of any kind of history or context of the work we're doing in terms of race discrimination, gender discrimination, etc. And I said, let me just ask you something. Do you know the phrase, 47 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal? And she looked at me and she said, that's famous, right? And I said, yeah. And I said, it's very famous, and you're an Illinois attorney. So this is one of the big ones, okay? She said, I don't know who said it or when it was said. I just know that it's supposed to be famous. And I said, it's the Gettysburg Address. Does that ring a bell? She said, no. And I went, okay. And then I proceeded to basically, this is terrible, I proceeded to basically embarrass her for about 15 minutes. I just asked her some questions about the Civil War, about Lincoln, about, the Emancipation Proclamation. She knew none of it. And her excuse was, well, it wasn't like I was a history major. And I said, this is not history major. The history major is deep dives on some of this stuff.
Yeah.
This is basic American history and culture that you should know. And I tell that story not because I was, proud of my superiority or whatever thing, but to flag again the comment you made that a lot of us from who aren't really that old are talking to people now who have absolutely no education in the most fundamental American.
Well, the thing of it is,
history.
Not to interrupt, but if you, which I just did, by the way,
well, unfortunately. I was finished anyway.
But I mean, if the thing of it is, if you're an engineer, okay, you know that the principles of an arch, the principles of water going downhill, those, they haven't changed since the first person dropped a boulder and saw it run downhill. So you at least should know the history of your field. And I'll say my field is economics and trading. You should know recent history of things that have happened and policies that have not worked and have been basically, I think the word that's going to come out, and I hate to, I feel like I'm saying shank on the golf course, right? The word stagflation is going to be all over us in about 6 months.
I was just going to mention, I don't think anybody in this administration, if Joe remembers it, I'd be thrilled. But I don't think anybody in this administration is really conversant with that term or what caused it.
I probably shouldn't get on this road a little, but I will with you just for a second. You won't let me go too far, and neither will David. But the one thing that aggravated, it's been aggravating me really for a long time. Being grown, I was raised a Catholic, and I guess I still am. And I think a lot of what
you're still being raised.
Well, we all are. We're all still. Hopefully, we're all still improving, right? The
continuous improvement. That's
I really thought that the it was a good thing to have the community spirit around the church, and I really thought that having somewhat of a community morals, and the nuns taught you the same thing your parents did. No, I think it was actually pretty good for people. I don't know if it's been good for me.
I think it's absolutely essential for the kind of coherence in a culture that we are losing, and I will cite Charles Murray's Coming Apart on that till the cows come home. Community groups like churches and Rotary Club and bowling leagues and all that other stuff that used to form the center of life for a community. The loss of those things has greatly damaged our ability to cohere in an economic, cultural, historical sense.
Why go bowling when you can sit there and insult people on the internet?
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
exactly.
But I guess what I'm saying, Lou, is that you look at things, and especially in Chicago, you've got let's say, for instance, well, you learn never to generalize when it comes to people, which is exactly what Dr. Martin Luther King was saying. Don't
sure.
just generalize that everybody's got black skin as an idiot. They're obviously not. I mean, duh. I mean, whatever it is, you never want to generalize because all you do is make an ass out of yourself, basically. And not to mention the fact it's just wrong. And yet, I mean, in the city of Chicago right now, if you look at heyjackass.com, you see that 85...
By the way, the essence of a diversity program, it wasn't supposed to be this way, but it's obviously developed this way. The essence of diversity training and diversity hires and all this is precisely that. It's the application of some generic principle and assuming all members of a particular group have that capacity.
Well, right, but you look at the numbers in Chicago and you say, God, 84% of the murders are black people killing black people. Well, the numbers are right there. However, that absolutely does not mean that the black person sitting next to you is a murderer. I mean, it doesn't at all. I mean, the black person sitting next to you is just like you are. I learned that at an early age, and there's a lot of people that are, but the idea that you can, for 15 years now, every comedian can call every priest a child molester. I mean, that every time I heard that, I just, my hair goes up in the back of my neck. You can't do that. even if it's whatever the percentage is, 5%, 8%, 2%, I have no idea, 1%. It's not everybody. And why should, and now right now, I can honestly say, I've spent my entire life trying not to generalize anybody. Once in a while, you know, by people's dress and so forth, you fall into that trap and I basically almost figuratively slap myself in the head and say, don't ever do that again. I mean, you saw somebody that looks like they look like they're dressed like a gangbanger and it turns out the guy's a lawyer. So don't ever do that because it's not right. And now I see people doing it to me every day. I'll be flat honest with you. I hate it. I don't like it. Just because I'm an older white guy doesn't make me a bigot. I never was.
It's become perfectly permissible to slander people by their race.
Yes.
As long as it's white and by their gender, as long as it's male.
Right.
And you will see this. Yeah, you see this on Twitter all day long. It's really an interesting phenomenon. I've had people say, well, the only reason you say that is because you're a white male, you know,
right.
And that's your worldview. And I just said that's bigotry.
Yeah.
And if you want to engage in bigotry, I'm not going to engage with people who are bigots. If you could take the argument on its merits, let me know what's going on. That's fine. But skip the amateur psychology as to why I believe this, and let's look at the argument. But that has become a standard tool in discourse, our political discourse. Even worse, the suppression of those discussions has become a standard issue in our political discourse, especially recently.
Yeah, but we could get back to the economic stuff, Lou. I mean, why is it now that we think that we can just print money and send it to the states? We're going to print money, give it to people. We're going to print money. Why don't we realize where this is going? I mean, we're not even saying that in the late 70s, well, starting in the 60s, the Vietnam War, late 60s, early 70s, that we started doing a, you know, 10, 12% money supply increase a year when your growth was 3%. Okay, so unless you have something with the velocity and so forth that I'm not going to go into, that really holds you down for a while, which could happen, you know, for a while, you know, because, well, I'll give the economic equation is your money supply times the amount of times it changes hands, which is the velocity, is equal to your, GDP times the price level. And you can't get away from that, Lou. You can't get away from it. It's just the way it is. So if your money supply doubles and your GDP stays the same and your velocity goes down by 10%, guess what? Your prices are going up by 90. It's just going now. But the weird part is it's not every price. It's not even. So some people get hurt.
I think this goes back to, again, the fundamental disconnect between what you and I used to think of as basic sort of economic education. When I came through high school, you know, my Western European history class talked about the Weimar Republic, talked about the basic economics of money, talked about, you know, rampant inflation and hyperinflation and, you know, cautioned, obviously, you know, here's a cautionary tale for governments in terms of living beyond their means. I think a lot of people understand that at a fundamental level, which is what, and you know, but not part of the elites, but they just understand this from their own checkbook, and they also understand that this kind of spending by the government is not going to them. It's going to the friends of the elites. It's
right.
Going to the people with influence. And that's why Donald Trump pulled in, or alternatively, it's going to people who are not going to benefit from it unless they are on the government dole.
Well, but he was just,
a lot of people understood that, and that's why Donald Trump pulled in more Latino votes, black votes, women votes than you know any Republican in history, because at some fundamental level, people understood that, and they understood the danger of it.
Yeah, but you know, Lou, he was, the weird part is, they're all just as bad. He was willing to let it go because it drove his stock market up, and that's how he graded himself.
I agree.
So, I mean, he was no better.
I'm not saying that Donald Trump had some inflated understanding of, you know, higher economics. I think some of the people advising him did, but no. I mean, President Trump ran his operation like his TV show. You know, what are my ratings? And he understood. He focused on, I think, some very basic numbers. But regardless, I think there's an understanding among a lot of people in the country that this stuff is bad, that it's not benefiting them, that they look at other people that it is benefiting, and that they, I really believe, they feel a level of disdain emanating from what we could call the coastal elites that just radiates toward this cohort of
well, Louis, it's always a progression. This is what I wanted to talk to you about, and if David wants to opine in, please. There's a progression. There's the mistake that was made, let's say in the 60s and 70s, was we're going to get off the gold standard, which, by the way, we did during the Civil War as well, if anybody wants to read that kind of history, which, of course, nobody probably does. And when we produced greenbacks, okay, because hence the name, the only thing backing them was the green on them, right? Hence the name greenback. I don't know how many people know that, but we produced greenbacks. And then there was, of course, the Confederate currency, which, you know, even though we were at war, it's the same country, basically. Now those guys are printing money, right? So in the same physical area, you know, I got two people printing money. So you had problems with inflation and so forth. Well, when it starts to happen, if you do it for a reason like that, say we're gonna break away from the gold standard, we're gonna increase the money supply, because we've had to throw a lot more debt out there, in terms of the Vietnam War. And it really comes down to we want to stop borrowing from our population. Because in order to do that, what do you have to do? The more you borrow, the higher your interest rates have to go, correct?
Yep.
I mean, but the other way you get around it is to have the Fed buy the crap. The Fed prints the money and buys the bonds. Okay? And so they buy them
Or you sell them, to a foreign government.
You certainly couldn't do that. I don't think you did that in the Civil War, and I'm not sure.
I think Britain and France bought a bunch of stuff.
Maybe, but I mean, you still didn't. You weren't getting 45% of your purchases from foreign companies in 1968 or 9. It might have been 10%. I should know that number, but I'll go back and find out. But it wasn't like now. Actually, now foreign companies are cutting back a little bit. But but I'm saying, even that is, it's misguided. But it's not sinister. Now that we're doing this, now that we're essentially letting the president, whoever he is, and his, you know, cadre of thieves, decide we're not only going to print the money, but we're going to send it to people that we like. We're going to print $15 billion and we're going to give it to the airlines. And we really don't care that $15 billion entering the system is going to cause some reaction, which will be inflation or something, that affects all the other people that are not getting the $15 billion. That is so incredibly dangerous. I can't even Rome didn't give Caesar the authority to just, you know, here, print the coins and send them out there to go wherever you feel like. I mean, that is so far over the skis, Lou. I can't even find that anywhere. I'm sure it's someplace. You know, if Milton Friedman was alive, he would say that, you know, somewhere in India or someplace or Pakistan back in, you know, 1842, they did that. But I know I'm not that good at this. But the fact is, the idea that you're going to print $2 trillion and like send it around to the people you want to grease the most. There's going to be somebody that maybe gets his $600 check. At the end of the year, he's still making 38 grand. And now everything he buys is double. I mean, it's insanity.
Did not Mr. Biden say he's going to distribute that stuff on the basis of race?
Well,
I thought he said something like,
"No, because he's giving it
to benefit African American, Latino."
That's such BS.
Know, small businesses,
they're going to end up benefiting the businesses and the states and those kinds of people.
Yeah, I think the first thing that's actually happening on this new bill is the bailout of Illinois and New York and maybe California on their pension funds.
But you're doing it with printed money. So you're doing it, but everything has a reaction. What do you think? I mean, and David, I want your opinion on this because David's a trader, economist sort of dude. If the Fed didn't help, what sort of interest rate do you think the federal government would have to pay right now to borrow $3 trillion? if the Fed didn't just print it? What would they have to pay? 10? 9?
They'd have to pay
at
a
least
lot
10.
Because, you know, that kind of a hit is huge.
Yeah, so I mean, we're ditching around the whole part of the economic. The idea is when the government goes out to borrow money from people, one of the problems is, I mean, Janet Yellen yesterday, I mean, for somebody who's supposed to be, I mean, is very smart, we should take advantage of the, I mean, here's, I might run over here for a second, David. Here's the insanity of what she said. She said the interest rates are low, so we should take advantage of it. Okay, now, if you're talking to the great unwashed or great uninformed, that makes sense. If you can go out and get a mortgage for 2.5%, go get it. If you plan on living someplace for 30 years. The problem is that they're not borrowing the money from people. They're going out and maybe they're doing it. The Fed's turning right around and buying it. So whatever they gain by selling Dave Scatena a 30-year bond at 2.5% or 3% or whatever the hell it is, it seems like a great deal. Whatever they gain, the Fed's turning around the same afternoon and buying the bond back from Dave Scatena. So when those rates go from 2.5 to 7, if they do, or 5 or whatever, the federal government's fat and happy. The Treasury is fat and happy because they've got a 2.5% loan out there and the current market rates are, say, 6. Problem is the Fed now has a piece of paper on their balance sheet that's paying 2.5% that's trading for 70 cents on the buck.
Yeah, and that's the remedy, or that's the prescription for another 2008.
But we don't care about that. The Fed's just going to...
No, apparently we don't. I wonder... I was trying to talk to one of my younger friends the other day about a guy I'd worked with at my former firm. And we were talking about inflation, and I said, you know, I'm pretty sure your parents have never really talked about this, but, you know, the interest rates used to be in double digits, like 12-13%. You could earn 12-13% on a savings account at a bank. And he said, you're kidding. And I said, no. I said, of course, the price increase in the outside world was 15%.
I think you always stayed ahead of it just a little, Lou, or at least even.
Okay, well, my impression was it was a losing.
It was not a big winner, but
and he said, "How, you know, when did this happen?" And I said, "Well, within my lifetime,
yeah,
within the last 40 years." And so, again, I don't want to beat this too much longer. It's the truth. Your comment is the truth. These are people that, and it's not just in this administration. It's the other, you know, the progressive side of things. The lack of historical knowledge, the lack of cultural glue that exists within our, quote, educated elites, unquote, is stunning. And I mean,
let's go to break and we'll hang on to that because I got some questions about ethics and other things. S&P futures up 10, NASDAQ futures up 64. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howes, Mr. Dave Scatina on the board. We have Mr. Lou Michaels with us as well. SP Futures up 9.25. NASDAQ Futures up 54. Dow Futures up 61. It's on top of a two-day huge rally we've had. Last week was a down week, but we've more than made up for that by far. Over in Europe, DAX up 60.4%, FTSE up 8.1%, CAC around down 10.2%. So slightly bullish over in Europe, but not horribly. Not horribly or not great. Nikkei up 233, up 0.8%. Shanghai up 38, that's a full 1%. Hang Seng down 34.1%. Hang Seng was up huge yesterday, as you recall. As a review from yesterday, Dow was up 257. S&P, though, was up 52. That's a lot. NASDAQ up 260. That's huge. That's 2%. Bonds, 1.09. So slightly lower than the 1.11 from the other day. Bund minus 0.51, which is right where it was. Japan, guess what? Positive 0.04, where it's been forever. Oil down 24 cents, 53.07. Brent down 28 cents, 55.80. Natural gas down 6 cents, down 2.47 as we flip to the next month out. So this is the it's got to be the June contract. Oh, it's going to be the March contract, sorry. The RBOB, I'm gonna check on that. It may not be the March contract. We definitely flip forward. RBOB is unchanged at 153. Gold, which had a big rally yesterday, is up again today, 390 to 1870. Silver up 19 cents, 25.96. Copper up a penny. Silver and gold have done this a few times, and every time they've gotten up here, we've gone back the other way. Platinum, one of our listeners, sent in yesterday. The platinum was $800, when Biden announced his candidacy. Now it's 1137. So it's up pushing 30% in, a year and a half. But there's no inflation. David, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports? Hardly any sports. I was looking last night. I couldn't find anything.
Right. Quiet morning at 6:37 in Chicago. Traffic moving smoothly, except for a couple spots. We got an accident at Lake Street in Itasca. Also, there's another one reported at US 41 at Delaney Road. For weather, Chicago, currently it's 33 and clear, and we are going to have a nice day. 39 and sunny for Chicago in January is great. Phoenix, 60, mostly cloudy. Today's highs will be 68 with scattered showers. In sports, as the Chief said, not a lot going on. Phoenix beats Houston 109-103. The Bulls play Friday night and take on the Hornets. NCAA hoops. Northwestern drops one to number 10 Wisconsin, 52-68. Loyola beats Valpo 75-39. And Arizona takes on ASU tonight in hockey. Again, another slow night. The Hawks play Detroit Friday night. The Coyotes did play last night. They lose to the Golden Knights 5-2. The NFL Championship weekend on Sunday. The Packers versus the Bucks, and the Bills take on the Chiefs. Back to you, Chief.
Those are both Sunday, right?
Those are both Sunday, 2 and 5 o'clock.
Well, we got to be watching. Watching those.
Has there been any informal announcement on Mahomes yet? I haven't seen anything there.
No, they actually they said it. He is following protocol. He's on day 3. and it'd probably be game time. But as far as the odds are concerned, Vegas has them favored to win it all.
Yeah, I saw that hit. That did not look like a concussion hit to me.
Drove his head around a little bit.
Yeah, but when you saw him stand up, his legs buckled.
Oh no! What it looked like to me was a pinched nerve in the neck, or some kind of cramp in the neck. I mean, I didn't see his helmet get hit. I didn't see his head bounce off the ground.
The guy drove his helmet, the front part of his helmet, into the ground.
No, I didn't see the kind of impact that typically would cause a concussion. Now, yeah, he was wobbly, but I thought he had his neck got jerked, and he had some kind of nerve impingement or something like that caused him to wobble. No, he definitely was wobbly. I just didn't see. I mean, there wasn't the kind of bang. You know, typically in a shot like that, you see the helmet bang off the ground. You see the impact of the helmet with somebody else. I just didn't see that. His head looked clean as he went down.
I think if you look at it again, you'd see the front part hitting the ground. It's like the opposite of the back flip when you go backwards and you whack your head on the ice or something.
Yeah, I'll take another look at it.
I have two questions for you.
The Packers are still favored over the Buccaneers, right?
Yeah, they're 3-point favorite as of right now.
Tell you what, that Buccaneers defense looks pretty good.
Yeah, they gave Rodgers fits last time. I look at Tampa Bay and I say to myself, that's a more complete team than Green Bay. Green Bay's quarterback is better, and I think they've got a few more offensive weapons, but I think overall across the board, I think Tampa is probably a more complete football team. And, look at their defense. They remind me a little bit of the Ravens back in, what was it, 2003, 2002,
right,
where they won the Super Bowl with a mediocre quarterback and a fantastic defense.
Well, the guy, White, is that his name? He's a one-man gang.
Yeah. Yeah, they got some horses. So we'll see. I don't know who I'm rooting for on that one. I dislike Brady generally, but I'm not a huge Green Bay fan either.
Lou, if I knew the answer to this, all four, which in the air, I would. You could be one of the few people. There's been four colleges that have had a president and a Super Bowl winning quarterback.
Huh.
And
I have absolutely no idea.
Well, you just named one. Brady and Gerald Ford.
Okay, well, Michigan, all right.
Then there's the Naval Academy, Staubach and Carter.
Okay.
And then there's, the presidents are way before any of our time. Stanford had Plunkett and who else? Two quarterbacks, I think. And It's like Warren G or some guy from way the hell back. Same thing with Miami of Ohio, like Taft or somebody went to Miami.
Yeah,
Ohio.
that would be Taft. Okay.
And Roethlisberger.
Okay. Interesting.
And the other one was Stanford. I forgot who the guy was. It might have been Harding or some one of those guys way back before our time. Anyway, I have two questions for you. One is, at what point here do we go back to some of the
I'll say inflation protocols. How's that? Protocol is a big word.
We didn't have that word back when we had inflation before. When do we go back to the inflation protocols when Home Depot comes out and says same store sales are up 5%, but oh, by the way, average prices are up 10? Are we ever going to give that other piece of information, or are we just going to go crazy over the 5% increase?
Again, we've had this conversation. I think information is going to be very carefully managed for the next 4 years. Starting with a number of things. I know that they fired the White House doctor yesterday before he could make an examination of Mr. Biden.
Hey, I got a question for you. You may know this because I don't want to lose my train of thought on the other one, but I can bitch about Janet Yellen in a minute. What are the logistics, the living logistics of having one powerful guy wander out at 7 a.m. and the other guy wander back in the afternoon? I mean, do they measure Joe for a new chair like 2 weeks ago, and I mean, it's, are they like ants over the quarters throwing out sheets and towels and cleaning everything and putting
well,
all new stuff in?
Supposedly they went through some kind of deep clean over there, which, I mean, if you're worried about the virus, that makes sense. I was gonna push, rather than continuing our economic discussion, for which I'm not qualified, I was gonna push an idea that it has been circulating, and I heard it expressed again yesterday, about the question about why we are being run by, the country's being run by septuagenarians and octogenarians. And what's, you know, what's the meaning of that? I mean, there's this piece was discussing it in the context of Dianne Feinstein, who is apparently going to run again, or at least has given indication she's going to run again. And the fact that even her staff are starting to say, yeah, this is not good. She's out of it. I don't think Mr. Biden, and I've said this before, I don't think Mr. Biden is alert or any better off than he was, you know, 5 years ago. He looked really, really old and feeble walking around yesterday.
I thought for a guy his age, he walked up and down Pennsylvania Avenue and dashing off to shake hands with people. I thought he looked pretty limber for his age.
I was watching him at the Tomb of the Unknown, and
I didn't see that part.
I just thought, man, that looks bad. I think they've got his meds adjusted pretty carefully, but again, they're going to be. We have to get away from the idea that we're going to have a president that we see regularly or frequently.
Well, we never saw.
I don't think that's going to happen with him.
How many days did Bush go without a news conference at one time? It was like 100 or 130?
Yeah, I mean it was long, but there were doubts about Bush's mental capacity, at least because on the basis of age. I want to go back to the.
I have a quick question before you do that, because I was ranting about it yesterday, and I want to go through it again. But this Janet Yellen thing, as you know, I never liked her as a Fed chairman, and now this. The more I read, because I read it again last night, and I'm appalled, Lou, by the fact that she's made $7 million in speaking fees, and now she's back, and she got the speaking fees from all the people. I heard her say, somebody asked her like 3-4 weeks ago, when her name was first floated, she said, well, she'd have to recuse herself from the dealings with a couple of firms that she got. Lou, the list is every single firm out there. How does she or anybody think she can be ineffective in that job? And I mean, at some point, when do you say you just disqualified yourself from that kind of position? And the other part is, two-part question is, it appears her speaking engagement was somewhere between 50 and 60 grand. Now, I don't know if that meant that if she had to go for longer than a day or who the hell knows, or she paid her own expenses or whatever. And then all of a sudden you got some outliers in there. You got Citadel at like 225, and you got UBS at 200 or somebody else. First question is, what does it mean even to try and regulate people you took all this money from? And secondly, if your rate's 200 grand, what do I get by paying you 2.25?
Well, okay, so I don't know the specifics of these things, but I do know generally that the nature of these fees are based on the level of personal contact that the customer, the client has with the speaker. So if you're getting a standard Janet Yellen speech in which she talks about her belief of the future, what she thinks is going to happen, maybe drop a few names, you know, that's one price. If you get it's like buying tickets to a rock show. Well, I don't know when the last time you did that was, but your concert. You know, you can buy the basic, hey, I get to watch Janet Yellen ticket, or you can get the backstage meeting with Janet Yellen, where, you know, you and 300 of your closest friends can sit in a room with the guy or with the woman and listen to her talk and chat with people, and she takes questions. Or you can buy the ultra-exclusive one-on-one contact with her. And depending on what she's willing or her people are willing to sell, that drives the price. So for her, I would guess for an extra $25,000, she'll sit down with, you know, the top three people in the company or the top five people in the company. And again, remember, what she's selling is access. She, What she's selling is the ability to pick the phone up in 6 months after she's gone into this administration and say, "Hi, Janet, do you remember me from the Goldman Sachs seminar you gave out and such? I'd like to talk to you about an issue we've got."
All right, why it's not often I give you grief, because usually you're more suspicious than me. Why do you even remotely think that, Lou? I mean, we're talking about somebody, her salary is a Fed chairman. And I know this from my friends who are at the Fed. She made $199,000 a year. There's people at the Fed that work there that make more than she did. In her last, when she was there, or maybe she was there. Let me finish. I mean, there were decisions made, not made, regulatory decisions made, not made, people they went after, people they didn't go after, people that they, according to our friend Pedro and a lot of other investigators, that the Fed was front run on their announcements all through her tenure. That, of course, they were supposed to investigate internally, and they never did. Duh. And now all of a sudden, for instance, Citadel. Now, those guys went from, you know, whatever, to no market makers. This is my industry. To virtually no market makers, not very many. And these guys make, like, $1 million a day or something. They provide liquidity all over the place. They have favored feeds from the exchanges, all these kinds of things. What makes you think it's not just... They actually just said, "Don't worry, we'll pay you this for a speaking fee when you get out of here." It's the same as what makes you think it's not just a flat ass bribe?
I do think it's a flat ass bribe. That's what I was saying.
But everybody says, and I've asked you and a lot of other people on the show that are let's say more intellectually nice about things than I am, and say, "Okay, well, you're getting it." What makes you think it isn't payment for something she already did? That it's not access for the future?
It could well be. I mean, I'm just saying what the normal process is, and the reason we go through this this song and dance is to avoid the image. Again, my absolute favorite Chicago story is the guy who was carrying a brown paper bag full of money. And just dropped it at, you know, Madigan or whoever it was. Not Madigan, it was somebody else. But he was just paying off people with paper bags full of money. You want to avoid that image, okay? So, we set up speaking fees. We set up speaking arrangements. We make donations to your foundation if you're Bill Clinton. Whatever. But yeah, I mean, I think that's what it is.
But UBS has been fined many times in the last decade. And has had some real problems. How the hell is she, going to go in? I mean, I guarantee you the first day in is not to say, "These UBS people, you know, they really are bad people. Let's go right after them." And the guy at UBS going, "Wait a minute, I'm holding the canceled check here for $200,000 to this lady. And she came after it's her first hour. What are the chances of that happening, Lou?"
I mean, I don't know exactly the mechanics. I don't know the situation at UBS, but I will tell you that this is a discussion we've had before. The more regulatory opportunities there are for a government agency, the more prosecutorial discretion becomes important. And one of the ways you deal with prosecutorial discretion, which is an employee or a lawyer weasel word for, arbitrary and capricious, prosecutorial discretion, the way you deal with it, is you get at the prosecutor or you get at the people who run the prosecutors, and that's part of what we're seeing.
I think this is a serious problem. It always has been, but it seems like it's getting, like David mentioned, we drove in this morning, that the Obamas got some massive amount of money from Netflix for some upcoming movie or show or something. What makes us think, you know, without accusing anybody, what makes us think that isn't total payment for, didn't they have to pick in his administration whether it was a open internet or closed or something? What was that big deal where...
The FCC neutrality, yes.
What makes you think it's not just a payment for that?
Could well be, although I think there's enough social justice warrior types on Netflix, board that they would say, "Yeah, we're doing we're doing a social good by promoting this person and these people and their causes, and that puts us on the side of the angels so that we can go home and look at ourselves in the mirror after we've marketed Cuties, which was basically, like I said, child pornography.
As to being on a board, Lou, I was on a small one. They had some African American lady yesterday. She's on four boards, and all she's talking about is diversity and putting more black people and more women on boards. Now, she didn't mention Asian or Hispanic. I mean, they're out.
No,
it's not about them.
These are very specific race hustles. It's this California statute that requires a certain ethnic makeup of boards of directors, which I think is blatantly unconstitutional. One of the stock exchanges has gone to the SEC and said they want to put that rule in. I think it's highly problematic, and I think it opens up the door to the kind of issues that we had talked about earlier with regard to critical race theory and identity politics. And to the extent that you are going to say, look, we believe that because you're black, you're going to add, whatever to the business, is just bigotry. It's bigotry in a particular direction, but it's based on what you and I would call racism at a fundamental level. The idea that you attribute specific characteristics to people, individuals, based on their race.
Well, the characteristic you want on a board is somebody who's never going to vote against the pay increase for you. And obviously somebody who's on multiple boards is never going to do that.
I think that's true, but I mean the idea with board memberships is you want people with great credentials that are coming in with lots of experience, that are coming in who can put a patina of legitimacy over your company's corporate operation. And the idea that, I'm sure you remember this. When the diversity concept was first introduced, the idea, the justification for it was a business justification, which was, we get people in here who think differently because of their different backgrounds, and African-American and Hispanic and Asian people have grown up completely differently, and therefore they will have a different worldview. And that diversity of ideas is and outlooks is going to help us make better business decisions. That was the justification for diversity.
Well, Lou, if it was me and you were actually trying to get somebody there who was going to help out and not just vote for you as a chairman, I mean, there's no doubt that if you start getting 15, 20 people like some of these boards are, to say that at some point there isn't a lady or a minority person anywhere who qualifies is a little bit odd too. I mean, I would have a diverse board if it was me, but I would have it just because I'd pick people that are qualified that just happen to be whatever they are. I mean, it wouldn't be like
that. I'm going to tell you right now that under the identitarian politics that are being promoted by a lot of people in this administration, that's indicative of that's a racist position.
Well,
all right. A meritocracy, race-blind selection process, race-blind decision-making process is, in effect, continuation of a racist system.
The difference is, Lou, that I honestly believe I'm looking for 20 people of that level. I think some of them are going to be minorities and ladies. It might be half of them or maybe more than that. I mean, if I ended up with 10 women, I wouldn't care. I just want the 10 best.
Yeah, well, that mentality is
wrong. I know.
Going the way of the dynasty.
I know.
The number of corporate settings.
I know. Well, that's. But the interesting part of all this
that's one of the reasons why, for people like you and me, this modern corporate world of diversity and critical race theory sounds totally nuts. And when you tell people, look, the first thing we're going to look at is whether you're black or Hispanic. We don't care about Asian because Asians are successful.
So
we don't care about them. But we're going to look at your racial identity. We're going to look at your sexual identity. We're going to look at your gender, and we're going to start ranking you. This is intersectionality in action. We're going to start ranking you according to these physical characteristics, and we're going to put you in these categories, And then we're going to make a decision about where you're going to slide into the organization based on your race, your gender, your sexual identity, what have you.
Well, I don't know about all boards, but I've seen some high-level ladies that have managed to make themselves back into, like Elena Cho and Wendy Graham. They were on some pretty awful boards and never resigned. And when I was on the SIBO board, before my time, and David probably remember this, Richard Ogilvy, he used to be the sheriff. And didn't he couldn't smile because he had some shrapnel wound in war or something. He always looked like this dour-looking white guy. He was on a SIBO board, and they pulled some stunt one day early on. I don't forget what it was. I don't forget. I never knew what it was. And he got up and said, if that's what you're going to do, I'm out of here, and walked out. I mean, I don't know. Did Wendy Graham never did that? Neither did Elena Cho at Wells Fargo.
No.
Right?
So no, the important diversity from a perspective of a business case for diversity is diversity of thought. And I would say categorically that the people that are being placed on these boards are not people with that kind of diversity.
But you should want that. You should want that. I mean, if you're Procter & Gamble and you don't have a lady or a few minorities on there or all, it doesn't really matter if they happen to be the best. I mean, to not want that is crazy.
No, but again, what you want are different worldviews.
Right.
So that you can cull in ideas when the board sits down and says, okay, we got this problem with this decision. How are we going to fix it? Well, we don't just get one perspective from a bunch of, 65, 70-year-old white guys. We get a perspective from some 35-year-old or some 50-year-old that's had a different life experience and sees the problem from a slightly different or a different angle.
Of course, you're assuming that you want the boards to do anything in the first place. Lou, we got a dash, buddy. We'll talk at you next week. SBB, how's you skiing?
Haven't been up yet. It's been pretty crazy up there. You have to make a reservation for a lift spot, and it's been pretty crazy.
Oh, God. So you can't just hop on a chairlift with somebody now?
You can't just drive up there without a reservation. They limit the number of people that could show up on each day. So you have to make a reservation, and then you can show up.
What's the lift ticket? A buck and a half? 150?
What? Yeah, 200.
I think I'll stick with golf or something, or learn how to do something. Maybe softball. We'll see.
Yeah. Anyway, Lou, yeah, it's pretty expensive.
Take care of yourself. SP Futures up 8.25. NASDAQ Futures up 58.50. Come back, Mr. Dan Janitas.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to ptisecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's ptisecurities.com. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to ptisecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's ptisecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control. Right here. Right now.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control. Right here. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Alley. He's Mr. Dave Scatina on the board. SP Futures up 850. What happened to my Buffalo Springfield? David?
Technical problems, Tom. Okay. Sorry about that.
No
buddy.
Problem. You know, I get my, need my Buffalo Springfield hit every morning. SP Futures up 850. NASDAQ Futures up 59. We have Mr. Dan Janitas from Kratos Capital with us.
There you go.
There you go. We got some, a little bit of something. Because I want to introduce Dan to what's happening here, Dan. It isn't exactly clear, bud.
It's.
You there?
If we're talking about bonds. We're talking about like the 10-year. I think, you know, as I've said before, there's going to be some pressure on both sides. You know, there's going to be some movement up with some concerns about inflation, and but I don't think we're going to see this runaway inflation, nor do I think we're going to see a 10-year that's going to be trading at 2.5 or 3% at year end. I think we're going to see a gradual move up, but it's going to make bonds more attractive to, say, foreign investors who may be more apt to, participate at 1.5%, and they're U.S. investors as well. So I would not recommend doing that, but it's somewhat unclear. What seems to be more unclear is on the equity side. The shift that we've seen recently, I think, will continue. I think we'll be moving out of growth and more into value. If you look at the growth value returns this year, value stocks are ahead. And that is our specialty, especially in the small cap value area. So we're seeing good performance this year and names that aren't necessarily tracking the technology or the stay at home. I think we're expected to see a lot of changes this coming year, and how the market reacts is somewhat unclear, although we're sticking with our knitting. We're sticking with what we do best and staying with the names that we think have good value in here and good upside.
Dan, why do you think, first of all, I based on any kind of logic, I would have to agree with you. But I'm looking at the market right now, and I don't see a whole hell of a lot of logic. I mean, it's, some of the stocks that you're talking about, when you even say growth and value, the stocks that have gone crazy, I mean, I think you look more of these than I do, but I don't even know who half of them are. I mean, the younger guys that work for some of the firms that I do business with, they call me up and they're like, what do you think of these four stocks? And I go, what are they? They were like $10 a month ago, now they're like 150. I mean, it reminds me of 2000, you know, trading the OEX pit where I was. I was obviously worried about the top 100 stocks, and if you did baskets and stuff, those were stocks. All the stocks people were trading were household words of everybody that were doubling and tripling by the second. I don't even know what the hell they are and what they did. I mean, they're out of the index. These things aren't even in the indexes, half of these stocks. I mean, I guess my question is, given the today's psychology, such as it is, I mean, I'm just observing. I'm not like I'm a psychologist. All of a sudden these things catch fire and they just go. It doesn't matter. I got some of them calculated. I'm not going to go in because I'm not going to give advice, but I got them at 20, 30, 40, 50 times revenue. I mean, we're not even talking about earnings per share. We're talking revenue, for God's sake.
Yeah.
So, you know, so even if they had zero cost of anything, if their margin was 100%, they'd still be incredibly. I mean, I guess what makes you think that the first day, I'll be nasty here, some idiot tweets out other than me, we've got some massive inflation on our hand, or look what's happening, that we don't see these bonds rates go from 1.3 or 1.1 to 6 in 6 months. I mean, it's happening everywhere else along the board.
There's, you know, like I said, one of the you know, the sort of, you know, factors that would arguments on either side, and the one argument on the other side is, I mean, certainly the fiscal stimulus that we're going to receive is not going to help. The huge deficit is not helping. But it's also a long-term, you know, as I mentioned before, secular movement. I mean, interest, it's a credit cycle, and interest rates come down, and credit spreads tighten, and then they start widening out again at some point as inflation picks up. And I, my thing is, I agree with the direction, but I don't know about the timing. So I don't believe the timing is going to be, you know, later this year, and maybe later this year that it starts. I don't think it's going to happen immediately. One thing that is, there are a couple of positives and then a couple of concerns I had about some of the announcements that are made about Biden's economic plans. And the one of the positives is that the initial focus is going to be on this, you know, the relief package and the vaccinations, and that seems to be a large part of the new administration's focus, and that actually is good. That's you know, that's going to help get us past this virus and moving forward. So I don't think there's going to be this huge focus on taxes immediately, raising taxes. On the other side, I am concerned not only about the, you know, the increase in corporate taxes, but more concerned actually when I was following it a little more closely on the uptick in capital gains taxes, going from 20% up to, you know, almost doubling. So that will impact, I think that will have an impact on the market. I don't think it's going to have an impact near term. You know, we tend to look ahead 9 months with the stock market, and the market still, I think, has some good, I don't want to use the momentum, but I think there's still a fair amount of confidence on investor side. And maybe there's even a little more confidence.
Is it confidence because of...
that there's definitely, you know, there, inflation is likely to happen. This is when it happens. And it's just how much and when are the questions, and how much can you, you know, this is the time to be, definitely the time, as we have always watched interest rate risk or hedged interest rate risk by staying short. This is a time, you know, where the odds of seeing higher rates are much, much greater than they have been in several years. So stay protected, whether you stay short or whether you hedge your positions, especially if you're going 10 or even longer. We tend to look more, you know, we tend to favor bonds that are shorter. 5 years would probably be the maximum. We still think there's some good investments on the, corporate side. One name I had mentioned last week that we like as a stock, SWM, pays about 4.5% dividend yield. It's a company that is what I would consider.
Is that SWM or XWM?
Materials.
S or X?
SWM.
All right, so Sam, Whiskey Mary.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And the bond is, they have a stock, you know, like I said, it's trading, it has a nice fat, you know, it's got 4.5%, which is not a bad dividend yield. Materials, they do apply materials, like your filtration systems for your water filters, and your air filters. They actually did some of the materials for, the masks, for the COVID masks. They do, and then they have another business, which is their cash cow, which is, paper, engineered paper. And the paper for cigarettes. And the first thing you think is, well, hey, you know, people aren't smoking as much, but they are still smoking in Europe.
Oh, yeah.
And the majority of their revenues in that business come from Europe. And people are smoking cigars. And they make, they have market share on the paper, you know, these engineered products. And the margins are huge. So this is a solid company, been around forever. Well, we started looking at it from a bond. You know, they do have some public bonds. And the bonds are 6 7/8 due in 2026. So here's a 5-year bond with a coupon close to 7% in a really solid company. And this, I would say, would be a good investment if you can get the bonds at 5% or less. And that would be a dollar price of about 105. We normally won't pay a premium, but in this case, we don't like paying premiums for bonds. But in this case, it makes sense if you can get that yield.
They don't have a callback. They can't come get them from you to 100.
They're not currently callable. I think there may be a call in the last year, but they're trading. Their yield to call is over 5% right now.
Okay.
So that's where you would look at this as a yield to call play. But again, you know, it's a win-win name. You can own the stock as well and collect the dividend. And you're in an industry, you know, you've got great management team. You're in an industry that I think isn't necessarily exciting, like some of the, you know, it's not like a Tesla name, but it's the name that is, you know, they've had gradual growth. They've actually had dividend growth for many years. So these are the type of, you know, they also have a big part of their business in netting. So when you, for infrastructure. So when you see, roads being built, you see all this netting on the side of the road.
Oh yeah, yeah.
New highway expansion. We're seeing a lot of that here in Florida.
The netting that, there's netting that goes now underneath the roadway, and there's some that they use for the grass and the landscaping.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and on the side of the road as well. So I think the infrastructure play is still a good play here. And again, I think you have to avoid the noise because we are hearing a lot of noise. There's an awful lot of opinions out there right now on which stocks are going to benefit with the new administration and which ones are going to, aren't going to benefit. So I think staying with good, solid investments that, you know, are in industries or in areas that, you know, will have upside in this environment. Like I said, infrastructure is one of our top names. We had talked before about Blue Knight,
yep.
You know, in the asphalt business. So that, you know, staying focused on a sector that that's going to do well. If you don't know the name, you know, we do all our homework. We, you know, I've been in a conference this week meeting with management of probably 20 different companies and then also several companies that we've owned, including SWM. So we really get to know the companies well. We do, you know, detailed research reports. We have a 30-page report initially and then a 2-page summary report. So we want to get to know the company. This has always been our style. We do deep research. We look at the risks associated and the upside potential. And if we feel comfortable being able to pick up the phone and call the senior management and ask questions at any time.
Well, it's interesting, Dan. I think there's a real solid chance that your mentality on this is going to be correct. And by the way, I'm really voting for you to be correct, not me.
You know, yeah.
Because
one other name that came up in this conference that I thought was kind of interesting and maybe a little bit apropos here, where you know we're in here in Chicago, is the Tribune Publishing, and one of their and it's not again thinking about newspapers as a, you know, you think of it as a dying industry, but they're really focused more on digital now. This company though that owns the Chicago Tribune and also owns the Sun Sentinel, which is a paper in Florida. The Baltimore Sun, they just bought the New York Daily News. Great management team. They've done really well in their acquisitions. No debt, a huge amount of cash. I guess the two things that really struck me about them is their success in acquisitions and how they've made acquisitions, being able to buy them at companies that reduce prices. And also staying up on the trends, so they're really moving to just digital only. On the newspaper side, I still think you missed something there, but it's, you know, I think for the majority of people, the, you know, the digital only is really the way to go in this industry. But here's a story that's a little, kind of goes against everything we were talking about. Here's a story where the stock's trading at 15. There's been a couple of people out there looking at purchasing this company. And if you just look at the price and the multiples that they're looking at paying and what it's worth, if you sort of look at the breakup value of this company, it's worth 20. So it's a real simple story. You know, you've got sort of the cream of the crop, some of the cream of the crop newspapers, and you've got a stock that's trading at a discount to its basically its breakup value. So finding names like this, I think, and understanding these names, really liking management here, is a positive, and kind of you have to go against the trend. You have to be a little bit counter. You have to kind of not follow the crowd, and that's really what we do. And I think that's what most good investors do is not just jumping on the bandwagon, because it's very easy to do, and it's very tempting when you see people making money, and you don't want to miss out. But this is the type of name that I think will do well regardless of the environment we're in.
So you don't look at the Tribune as the lifeless carcass that the thief Sam Zell left?
But yeah, exactly. Sam Zell, right, Sam Zell. Yeah, and that's kind of—I mean—that's sort of how I think a lot of cities view their local newspapers. But there is, you know, like I said, there is still you know, digital and digital advertising, and you know, if you want to look at something that's sort of off the beaten track.
Well, they used to own WGN Radio and TV as well, and all kinds of radio and TV outlets.
Yes, and they're assets. And the thing is, when you have an asset that's worth something, it's, you know, it's saleable. And And maybe let me give you one more name that is a different.
Well, what is the name of that company? What's the name of the company you've been talking about that bought? Just thinking about the they're on the Sun. You never gave us.
Oh, that's Tribune Publishing.
Okay.
TCO Tribune Publishing, trading at a 15. So you don't. Wouldn't recommend that you pay more than 15, but it's worth 20 if you just do look at it from a breakup. You stick all the assets and they were to be sold off individually, you would, be at least 20. So that's a kind of a clear cut story if you're looking at asset play. Regardless of where this industry goes, you still have a need for, for information and a need for, news and whether you're getting it digitally or, like some of us still have a newspaper that you read.
Yeah, I still like to.
It's a decent business. One other name that's another kind of local name there, Milwaukee based company called Brady, ticker symbol BRC. And what we like about Brady is, what we like about all these companies I'm mentioning is the strong free cash flow. So cash flow positive business. They do ID. They have two businesses: ID solutions, which are the IDs that you think of that people wear in the hospital or at work, and the machines that print these IDs and the barcodes. And they also have a workplace safety division, which has done well with COVID because they make signs and labels and. So again, not necessarily exciting business, but their dividend, dividend yield is, dividends are paying around 2%, but they've increased dividends every year over the last 35 years. So this is one of those sort of solid, steady Eddie companies, probably trading a little below where, like a little below its intrinsic value or the market is maybe taking it up a little bit in here, but if you can get it less than $50, I think it's a decent buy. And again, it's these companies, I think, that are going to have the long-term, if we see a sell-off in the market, I don't think these companies are going to sell off as much.
Well, I hope that the world stays this way. and you're absolutely right. And by the way, these sound pretty interesting. I'm going to take a look at them for some of my clients, but I remember the very first part of the inflation last time, Dan, and I sure as hell hope we don't degenerate into that. Because all it came down to, it didn't matter what the company was or what they made. It had to do with where they stood on the pricing power chain. I mean, if you were the guy who sold the hamburgers and the guy hit you up with the buns going up 10%, if you could raise the hamburger price 12%, you were a winner. It didn't matter what you did or what you didn't do. And the last thing you wanted to do is be in the competitive area where people could raise prices to you and you couldn't raise it down the line. And if you had a long-term contract, didn't have a escalation clause in it. I mean, I did the escalation clause for a railroad contract at Pullman. And you know what, Dan? If we didn't have it, I don't know what we'd have done because it was up. I mean, we signed a contract for like $50 million. At the end of the day, it was the years we took to make the railroad cars. The final price was like 65. If we didn't have that, we would have taken a hit like no tomorrow.
And one of the things about the companies that I mentioned, and the companies that we're focused on again, market share. They have tremendous market share. They have market share in all their divisions and with all their products. So as a result, when it comes to a competitive environment or pricing environment, they're the ones that are going to generally have the pricing power. These companies also, if they don't have, like in the case of Tribune, they don't have any debt. And the other two companies, SWM and Brady, don't have much debt either. So if your balance sheet is competitive in an environment where we have prices going up, that's also going to be useful or helpful. So
right,
traditionally used the debt markets as a way of financing, then if you've been financing through organic growth, then you're going to be in much better shape than the company that keeps going out and buying, making acquisitions with debt.
Well, God help you if you have short-term borrowings and how you're up to...
Yes.
Well, I mean, what would you say if the... I love to ask you these questions. I know you don't like to answer them because... but the... What would you say that the Treasury would have to pay for all the stuff that Biden signed into law yesterday or whatever, executive order, if the Fed didn't help him out? Where do you think interest would go in a week?
Yeah, that would be a challenge.
So I mean,
that would be a major challenge.
There's
going to be a quote price to pay. There's no question. I mean, that comes over time, you know, and I think there has to be some playing out. Like you said, we're in an somewhat unclear environment in terms of how all of this is going to play out. You know, I know we are going to be impacted in our business by the capital gains tax, and there's just no way that can't affect us at some point. We are going to be impacted to a certain degree by the rise in corporate taxes, because we benefited when corporate taxes were coming down. So there is no question that it's going to have an impact, say, on our market, you know, say, in our industry. And then certainly, you know, as a country and as a, you know, as an entity that has just continued to take on more and more debt, just like some of these high-yield bond companies, you do have a price to pay down the road if you can't remain competitive. So there's going to have to be a lot of things that come together, including the international picture, trade. You know, we're going to have to see how this all comes together over the coming year. And hopefully the plan of getting through COVID, which I actually agree with, I think get that out of the way, and then we can kind of move forward. Hopefully that's going to be a good start here, and we're not going to see anything crazy coming up, say, at least in the next few months or possibly even this year.
Well,
I really don't think there's going to be, if Biden is saying that he's going to be working with the other side pretty, you know, it's going to be a major focus as well, I don't think we're going to see any type of, you know, runaway plan, if you will, or sort of crazy spending beyond what we're already seeing right now. I think this is going to hopefully just get us over the hump with the virus, and then we're going to move into a period that will be more stable, or that's what I hope for, at least.
Well, when you look at the numbers, which I'm not even going to encourage you to do, because it really make you want to reach for the airline sickness bag, but I mean, we're talking, you know, $3 trillion is roughly 2 years of income taxation,
right,
from the government. We're like, what have they spent this year? Four years worth of taxation? Like, that's kind of a lot.
It is, yeah.
But I mean, one question I wanted to ask you, because you brought up the capital gain, I had not heard that they had talked about going that high, but I'm surprised. I mean, it's not like you haven't thought of it. The flip side of that is so bizarre, and I honestly think, Dan, and you can kick me from afar, I think one of the reasons, one of the big reasons why we had, although Carl denies it, that we had the alleged surpluses during the Clinton administration in the early 2000s, was that the people who sold the dot bombs and made the money had to pay a lot of taxes, and the people who bought them at the top and sold them lower and got basically their ass kicked couldn't take over off more than $3,000 a year. And that when you talk about the capital gains rates, say, going to 35 or 40, whatever they're talking about, not one soul on either side of the aisle talks about raising the capital gain deduction against your ordinary income from $3,000 to like $200,000, where it ought to be. So what you're going to end up seeing, if all of a sudden, say, the market were to crash, and not the market's going to crash, but even, so I'm looking at all these stocks that one of the guys sent me, is SWKS, and the thing was $70 in April, and now it's, you know, 170. But there's a lot of them like this. There's a million of them. Now, somebody somewhere is going to buy this at 70 and sell it at 170, and he's going to pay, well, he's going to pay 30 or 35% of $100, right? Well, if,
close to 40, yeah.
If the thing goes back down, some poor guy is going to buy it at 170 and sell it at 70, and he can only take off $3,000 a year. That's
great.
A massive plus to the federal government in a way that I think caused a big part of that. We don't want to put that on our people again like we did in 2000, but
right.
I think that that's what they're planning, that the winners pay and the losers don't get anything back.
Right, and that's right, and that has to change if we want to see continued upside in the market. I think you make a really good point that this, you know, the capital gains tax situation is going to keep us at best in a trading range, and it's going to keep a cap on where the market can go, and that would be the, you know, it's the best way to look at it is that it keeps a cap on where it goes, and not that there's going to be huge downside. So that still has to play itself out later this year, and I didn't notice it either. It wasn't something that was on my radar screen initially. And then I said, wait a minute, how did this kind of slip in there? Because this is fairly significant.
Oh, yeah.
So especially, again, for for our industry and then also for the markets as a whole. I think there's going to be a different approach, you know, if we're seeing, capital gains go from 20 to 39.6. I think there's going to be a different approach to investing, and we're gonna see that play out over the next year.
Well, I mean, most of the people that are chasing these kinds of, we don't have that many people here, believe it or not, hardly any that just will take a stock that's running up and, like, I'm going to say, don't even really know what they do, and charge in and buy it. I mean, it's, you know, that's allegedly the Robinhood investors and the people that are on margin. We don't, that's not our business, Dan, and I don't think it's yours either.
No, not at all.
But I'm gonna guess that you have the same view of the world that I do, that most people are rational like you are. And I'm not so sure that that's, I think a lot of people chasing these stocks, they could be turtle eggs in Buana, for God's sake. And as long as they're going up, they don't care. I want in. Right. It's
right. And the thing is for people who aren't, you know, don't have our backgrounds and not in our industry, as a you know, do-it-yourselfer in this business, you do get that positive reinforcement when the price goes up.
Sure.
So you're saying, hey, I could do this. I'll put more money in, and you continue to do it. And then the biggest challenge, I think, for those people is when to sell, because this, you know, discipline is, it's not a buy discipline when everybody's saying it's going up, but it's the sell discipline that's really going to, decide in the long run whether you're going to make money.
You never sell. And there were firms.
Right.
There was a guy, you know the name, so I won't say it. It was, they're out of, I think it was Canton, Ohio? Big money manager back in the day.
Right.
And they had, I don't know if they got into Cisco on the initial price or something, Dan, but they rode Cisco. They were from a group that size. They're way bigger than us for sure, and probably bigger than you guys. I'm going to say they were one of the best firms, but they were so overweight Cisco, it was scary. And the thing went from like 6 or 7 to 70 or 65, and all the way back down. They never sold a share, never bought a put, never sold a call. They did the total U-turn on the thing.
Yeah.
And I think you can't get these stocks out of people's hands. I mean, I talk to people who have 401ks, and they say, boy, you know, I'm about to retire, and I've got, you know, I thought I'd have maybe $1 million retirement, which seems like a lot of money, but it really isn't. It's going to take you the rest of your life. And I got like $1.5 million, and I said, well, God, if you think it's too high and you're happy with that number, why don't you lighten up? Why would I do that? I mean, where am I going to put it? Because it could go the other way. Well, it just goes up. Why would whatever possesses me on a Monday to roll over and say Tuesday morning I'm lighting up? It'll never happen, Dan. It never has. I mean,
it's
a very rare person who says enough's enough, and the next day if it goes up another 2%, isn't kicking himself. Because now you lost that money. What do you mean you lost it? You weren't in. Doesn't matter. I should have had it. It was really mine. It was like crazy stuff. But your approach, I think there's none better, Dan, is to find firms that don't have the debt problem, so their interest rates aren't going to go up if they do go up. That you find they have a cash flow. It looks like they have at least neutral pricing power. That if somebody raises something 10% on them, they can raise the next guy 10%. And that's what you look for. I mean, and I think that's what you're doing, right?
Absolutely, yeah. These companies on the equity side, you know, this environment coming up could create some, you know, good acquisition opportunity. So we're still in a strong M&A environment, which again, that bodes well for the economy. So I don't know, if that slows down, but, you know, for now these companies can continue to grow through acquisition if they have, you know, strong organic growth and they're well managed.
Well, as long as you give me a nice package so I can hang with my clients who I love dearly, we'll let you have PTI for $1 billion.
Okay. That sounds fair.
Take care of yourself, man. We'll talk
all
next
right,
week. SB Futures up 8, NASDAQ Futures up 64. Be right back.
Sounds good. Bye.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control. Right here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Dave Scatina on the board. S&P Futures up 750, Nasdaq Futures up 70. So we're positive here again today. Dow Futures up 56. Well, not quite as strong yet as yesterday, although that could change. DAX up 29.2%. FTSE up 11.2%. CAC around down 20.4%, so not much going on over in Europe. Nikkei up 233. Nikkei's been real strong, 0.8%. Shanghai up 38. That's a full 1%. Hang Seng down 34.1%. They were up huge yesterday, so Asia to the upside. As a review of yesterday, record day, Dow Jones up 257, 0.8%. S&P up 52, 1.4%. And the NASDAQ up 260. That's a full 2%. 2% a day. Come on. Why not? Why not? 900,000 people. Weekly jobless claims, but let's be up 2% a day. It's okay. Bonds, 10-year, 1.10. The Bund, minus 0.50. So that's, they're making progress towards zero. They were 0.69 maybe a month and a half ago. Japan, however, stuck at this between 3 and 4% to the positive, like, every single day. Oil, down 17 cents, 53.14. Brent down 11, 55.97. Natural gas down 6 cents, 247. RBOB stuck at 154. Gold up 280 to 1869. Silver up 20 cents, 25.97. Copper up 3 cents, 367. David, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
737 in Chicago. Traffic picking up normally. I do have an accident to report that earlier the two lanes were closed on the Eisenhower. It has been moved over the right shoulder. It's Eisenhower West right before US 20. Chicago weather day, currently 33, sun coming up and clear. We're going to have a high of 39 and sunny. Phoenix listeners, 60 and mostly cloudy. Highs today 68 with scattered showers. In the NBA last night, Phoenix beat Houston 109 to 103, and the Bulls take on the Hornets Friday night. NCAA hoops, Northwestern drops number 10 Wisconsin 68-52. Loyola beats Valpo 75-39. Arizona will be taking on ASU tonight. In the NHL, Coyotes lose to the Golden Knights 5-2, and the Hawks play the Detroit Friday night. Championship weekend in the NFL. The Packers take on the Bucks at 2 o'clock, and the Bills take on the Chiefs 5 p.m., all on Sunday. Back to you, Chief.
What's the weather supposed to be like in Green Bay, Mr. Meteorologist?
I think it's going to be like in the mid-20s, so it's not freezing, but I haven't seen a forecast of snow yet up there.
Oh, no, I haven't either, but they said last week it was going to be like in the 20s, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's normal for January up there.
Yep, well.
Actually probably warm.
Yeah, it's actually fairly a little warm, yeah. Do we have Mr. Flanagan?
You do.
We do.
Hey, John, how are you?
Tom, I'm good. How about you?
I'm doing okay. I'm not beating up on our guests, but what I'm finding, John, is that without giving your age, because you're becoming this old duck, not me, of course, even though we're the same age.
I may be older, Tom.
Can't be very much, but the. Well, you pulled back in grammar school? We graduated the same year, as I recall.
Yeah. Well, August 52 was me, so.
So you were like Belushi, you know, you were in seven, it took 7 years to get through second grade or what? Anyway, it's, when you talk about the Fed and you talk about what's going on here, the difference of a couple of years, is dramatic in your view of the, how this inflation thing will plan out, John. And it's not whether somebody's right or wrong. It has to do with your life experiences. And everybody right now is convinced, anybody under the age of, I'm going to say, certainly 55, maybe even 60, is convinced in their lifetime that the Fed has always appeared to be somewhat, I'll use the term, in control. And that everything they do is somewhat measured, and they make mistakes, you know, blah, they're not perfect, everybody gets all that part. And sometimes their policies lead to unintended consequences. I mean, all that's there. But what I recall, Jan, is a Fed totally out of control to where interest rates went, you know, up 3% and 4% in a couple of month period. And if I say stuff like that, people look at me like I absolutely got four heads, which maybe I do. I don't know. But I mean, it's a total different mindset of confidence in the people that are, quote, running the show that I have because I was around for most of the last inflation instead of the people that came in at the tail end. The tail end, all I think about is Volcker is the big fixer and everything coming back together and everybody getting on straight and Reagan's second term and we took off and never looked back. And that's interesting. That's like, it's like looking at World War II, like after D-Day, it looked a hell of a lot different than after Pearl Harbor. And then, I mean, there's just a question of when you come into the, and it's one's not right or one's not wrong. It's just one, it's where you start out, right?
They're incomplete, you know, and you get a distorted picture depending on where you begin looking and where you stop looking, or how big of a frame you want to build around this. So.
Because the reason why it's etched in my feeble brain is when Robin and I got our I think it was in January or February, I forget which, we got a 8.5% bridge loan on a condo we bought. We're going to remodel and try and sell. And by the time we sold it, which was late summer, I think our rate was 14.5%. And if you say that to somebody right now, they think you're a senile old dude or something. Man, that can't be. How could the Fed ever do something like that? The Fed did it because they were out of control. They were panicked. They were totally panicked. And it looks to me like they're heading down the panic road again. And I don't want to see them there because I've seen them there before. and it ain't pretty. It isn't. I just, you know, other people say, you're out of your mind. That could never happen. I mean, even Dan, who's about as smart a guy as I've come across, oh, no, it'll be gradual. How do you know that? You hope that, but how do you know that? Out of control means out of control, doesn't it?
Well, I have felt, you know, and I suspect that, you know, it's just going to confirm what I've sort of come to in my belief, that you think of the Fed as being some kind of protective instrument that is there to create stability and to allay fears and to control things such that they don't go spinning out of control periodically and managing the economy in a way that makes sense for the greatest number of people, which I think it's pretty clear now that it isn't at all what its function has come to be. And I think anytime you see it moving down this path, like you just stated, which I think is true, it's off the rails, that has some kind of logic in the mind of the Fed too, that this is something we can't stop. We have no interest in stopping it. We're not here to stop it. We're here to manage what happens, and this is kind of the best we can do. And they're not particularly panicked by this in the way that other people might be, because they see it as part of a long-term process that they're essentially reactive, and they're trying to make money for certain people in certain ways, and the rest of it is not really their problem. And they take, ultimately, I think, a very cold, calculating view of this. They don't care about the pain that these policies cause in the larger population. If that really is of no, importance to them whatsoever, how else could you end up with things like the dot-com and the housing crisis and the SNL failures? And, the list goes on and on. If they really were there to prevent these things from ever happening again, we'd see some kind of different pattern here. But it's pretty clear that these are just things that the Fed is perfectly happy to live with and to ride out.
Well, but
maybe that sounds too callous for early in the morning. But
well, the two-step process, the Fed is designed to be independent, okay, and as independent as anybody can be in Washington, right? They're designed to be independent, and the reason why they sort of need to be independent is I don't know. I'll do this as brief as possible. David, shut me off if it's not Cliff Notes version. The way the money works in this country, and it's actually fairly interesting, and it's pretty ballsy the way we set it up, is really anybody, any bank can create money. And you say to yourself, how the hell does that happen? Well, it's real simple. If David walks into a bank and drops $1 million in there, okay, what's the money in the bank? The money supply right now, David has $1 million, he drops it in there, it's $1 million. But based on your reserve requirement, let's say the reserve is 20%, now it's probably down to like 5 or less, who knows, but for years it was 20%. The bank can now turn around and lend John Flanagan $800,000, okay? So what does John Flanagan do with his $800,000? He puts it back in the bank, right? So now, what's the money on deposit in the bank? It's $1.8 million, right? Not $1 million.
Right.
So then that 800 can now be rented loaned to me, not 800, but say 640. Because now it's another 20% off the top. So I put that in there. Well, now what's the money supply? It's 2,440,000, right?
Right.
So we can, but now if times get bad, and all of a sudden I lose my 640 or something happens, it's gone. I pull it out of there and now, we're down to there, and I start not paying. Okay, well now, maybe you don't think that the bank, something happens to you, and you get rid of your loan too. Well, all of a sudden, the money supply can go up and down by stuff that nobody really controls, because individual people can do it, an individual banking, and that's the way we're set up. And I think it's a terrific setup. But now, what has to happen? Somebody has to ride herd over the gross amount of cash money that's being created and getting rid of on a weekly or monthly or yearly basis. So you put the Fed on top of this and you say, okay, it looks to me like the economy's going pretty good. Everybody went and got a loan. The money supply went up like God knows how much. What are we going to do? We're going to run too hot here. We're going to become inflationary. We're going to have, a boom and then a bust. We want to get rid of that stuff. So the Fed will do is they'll say, I'm going to go in and I'm going to sell bonds to people out of my inventory. So then all of a sudden people send cash to the Fed even on the margin, and then all of a sudden the drawdowns in all the different banks might be 100,000 here, this bank, 50,000, a million, another bank. All of a sudden there's a drawdown, and now is because of the multiplier effect and the reserve requirement, actually has a tremendous, probably has five times, if the Fed drags out $1 billion, it probably has a $5 billion hit, right, to the amount of money in the system. Same way if it's the other way, and all of a sudden the business is lousy and everybody starts paying off their loans or losing money, the Fed can inject money into the system. So that's what they do to control it, okay? But now we've gotten to the point where they're really just financing whatever the fiscal side wants to do. Because the Fed the Treasury should be out borrowing money if they want to spend it or paying it back if they don't. But they're out of that game. But there's no chance at all that all the stuff Biden's talking about, or Trump or whoever it was, they're going to come up with a $3 trillion package. They have no more intention of borrowing that money from the general population than I do being a jockey in a seventh race today. I mean, right? It's just not going to happen. So the Fed is going to turn around and give them that dough. But now it's become a lot less general, John, because I know that the Treasury is going to turn around and give that money to United Airlines. They're going to give it to, you know, I'm going to say Trump's kid, Biden's kids, something, you know, a mask factory. There's specific spots where it's going to go. So now we're essentially printing money to give to individual groups of people. Now, we may throw the rest of us a bone and send us a $600 check so we feel good, but it's a very minor part of this big giveaway, right? Because the giveaway is to other people. It's $15 billion to the airlines. It's something. It's the specific spot. So not only are you turning the printing press on for reasons other than just maintaining your money supply and maintaining an orderly credit market, you're now printing the money press up and giving it to specific people that are in this 7,000 page bill. That was never intended, John. It was never intended anywhere that I can see.
Of course not. But you know, the $15 minimum wage is the same thing. It just means that there's going to be an ever more select group of employers around who are going to be able or willing to pay their employees, you know, a minimum wage of $15. The smaller companies are going to go out of business. They'll be combined. You know, they'll be aggrandized with others because they can't work on that kind of a margin. So the whole thing is designed to favor particular levels of the economy, or in your example, particular businesses, particular companies, and it's shameless.
Yeah, it's totally shameless.
This is all, you know, normal stuff now. There's nothing, you know, whoever reads these bills to find out exactly what went into this mess, the particular companies, for you know, whatever reason, are ahead of anybody else. You'd be sickened if you knew very much about it, I guess.
Well, I think if you were to ask, it's hard to say something like this, but I will anyway. If you were to ask any economist and get him off his left or right or whatever liberal or conservative bastion and you ask him about minimum wage, I'm going to say that the answer that I will give is the same as everybody else will give, you know, 90% of the people. They'll say if the going rate, if the market-determined rate for, quote, a lower-end worker is $10 and the minimum wage is $8, and you want to be a hero as a politician and you raise it to 9.5, knock yourself out. Because
right.
The going rate's already 10, and if you want to look like you got a, you know, a big pair and you're helping everybody, knock yourself out. But if the going rate's 10 and you make it 25, you're peeing into the wind. You can't do that because the market rate is stronger than your law, right? And so, I mean, all you're going to do is either cause people to work less hours, get paid or get paid cash or something for less money. You're going to cause all these economic discontinuities that you don't want to do. I mean, if you can do what you think you can do or what these guys think you do, why not make it 100? Then everybody's got money. There won't be any poor people, right?
Right.
I mean, make it 200.
Strengthen the black market in the economy too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, make it 100. Why not go the whole route? But I mean, if we're gonna put, you know, $1 trillion out there, let's make it 20. What's the difference? Let's make it 30. All of a sudden, everybody's got so much cash in their pocket. But guess what? You still can't. There's still no more bread. So all you're gonna do is ratchet up the price of the bread. I mean, you got to ask yourself what can you really accomplish here? And the answer is by doing what they're doing. The answer is nothing. But sure, I'd love to be the politician. If I notice that the going rate for the McDonald's entry level employee is 10, and I saw my minimum wage at 7, I'll be happy to go grab the bazillion votes and say I'm raising this to 9. This 7's an outrage. But what did I do? I didn't do anything, right?
Right. All you did was get yourself reelected.
Yeah. but if I made it 25, what did I do? I mean, it can't be 25. You know, right?
Well. Given the way things are going with this discussion, they may not stop at 25.
Yeah.
The social justice warriors, I think, are satisfied with 25. So, God knows, you know, the sky's the limit. So, but I just, whatever it is, it's going to cause dislocations that nobody really likes. Nobody can even foresee completely. So it would be a heck of a road to start going down before you knew where you're going to end up with
it. Well, you either trust your economic system to get the proper wage. But again, I think what we've done is we've messed with that a lot, John. And that there, if you were to ask me, or I think if we could all get together and, you know, would argue, not argue like we always do, I think this whole group on this show would agree on the fact, and Carl certainly would, is that one of the things that we've had two problems with wages in this country. And one is we sent some stuff overseas to where the people at the low end don't have the bargaining power they used to have. Okay, so the price they get is not a fair price. That the $10 really ought to be 12, right, or 15, or maybe not 15, but 12, 50, or 13. Because I think most people, when you do the economics of it, wages are the same as, you know, the price of corn and wheat. I mean, you're gonna pay up until the marginal efficiency of the last guy or lady. So the thing I always have about Walmart's wages, now, you know, I pick on them, they want to pay me $10 an hour. I got to believe if you and I were working at Walmart, we're going to be worth way more to them than $10 an hour.
Of course.
Now, the question is, why aren't we paid what we're, quote, worth? Because they're so big and everybody else has left town.
And there's a lot of people like us.
Yeah, there's a lot of people like us. So somehow or another, the people at the low end are, I think, in a lot of ways, are not paid what they're worth, and the people on the high end are paid 100 times what half of them are worth. I mean, it's not competitive at all, because you don't see the head of Commonwealth Edison saying, I'm looking for a chief financial officer, and by the way, I'm paying his bump, or bump at, or whatever you want to call him, $4 million a year, and I'm willing to pay $1.5 million. I bet you get 50 resumes, maybe people better than you have.
Well, and yeah. This is just thinking about it in terms of people who are paid by the hour. But think of people in academia who are hired for a semester's work, an adjunct faculty member, somebody who has to have at least a master's and maybe more than that to be credentialed to teach in some institution. And I'd say if they're getting paid $3,000 a semester to teach a class, whether it's online or face-to-face or a combination, they're doing pretty well in the academic market. But if you factor in what they have have to shell out in terms of their transportation, because that doesn't cover any of their expenses to get around. It doesn't include health insurance, nothing. They're making less than any respectable minimum wage anywhere in the country. So you've got huge numbers of people who are highly qualified and did all the right things, and there's no jobs for them, so they take pretty much slave labor types of jobs. And, if they were getting minimum wage at Walmart, they'd probably be better financially, but it isn't at all what they plan their life to do. So gross inequities and ways of tamping down your enthusiasm or your ability to stick around in a job market like that.
Well, you look at the discontinuity, I'll say, and that I have this discussion with, by the way, you have to meet him one of these days, our friend Eric. He'll be coming out one of these days because he's concerned about the vaccine, obviously. But he's a teacher over at Columbia, very liberal guy. But the point comes down to, and our friend Bob Golden used to do this at our late friend used to do this at Notre Dame. And when you start talking about how much teachers are paid versus how much people are paid for class, for the class, and you ratchet back, 30 years ago. I mean, right now at the University of Chicago, I know I'm jumping schools around here, but I could talk to my own. The University of Chicago, my entire two-year education costs less than one class now. So every class now in the University of Chicago, I believe, is in excess of $6,000, and you got to take 20 of them, right, to get out of there. So, it's $120,000 for 2 years, and it's got to be more because it was $6,000 3-4 years ago. So say $6,500. So if there's 30 people in there, I mean, there's no way on earth that professor is making, it might be an adjunct guy, like you're saying. There's no way.
He might be making what one student is paying.
Yeah, maybe one student is paying. I know at Notre Dame, I was in, actually Sarah found it. I had a quote one day regarding, what happened during the 2000 problem, and one of the guys had that on his ethics test, right? So Sarah found it. So I met the guy down there in one of our reunions, and he's telling me, do you have any idea how much we make at these off sites? Because we got a guy teaching class here, and there's another 25 people at three different sites paying the same amount of dough. There's 75 people paying $5,000 a class. And he goes, we're paying this guy, we're paying his bump, $5,000 for the class, and there's like 100 people. Because the management class, though, makes all the dough.
Well, it's the norm, the required classes that everybody has to take for their certificate or degree programs. Every institution is guilty of this. They've shaved their tenure track faculty down to their absolute bare minimum, and there's plenty of people in the adjunct boat that are just, you know, killing themselves to get a gig. And of course, they may not get it the next semester. There's no guarantee they'll have it for two or three consecutive semesters. So they can pay pretty much as little as they can get away with, and they still got people beating down their door trying to get these jobs.
Well, like Eric says, it's this management class. They're not even owners. When people talk about nobody cares if you pay a dividend. You want to give the guy a raise. Anyway, John, thank you very much. SB Futures
just
now.
A shout out. I want to say thanks for Lou's comment on the show earlier about the Kipling poem, which I missed in my English education. So I want to thank Lou for bringing that poem to my attention.
So our buddy Frank is...
Frank, to give him my best.
Well, Frank, somebody whacked into his car yesterday. He was dead stop, and some lady came flying around the corner and head on him while he was dead stop in the left turn lane.
Hope he didn't, wasn't hurt.
He was in getting a bunch of tests, and I said Maddie had set the person up that was a right winger. He goes, I wouldn't be a bit surprised. Talk to you on Monday, but SP Futures up 75 cents. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.